Ready for countdown?
Ready for countdown.
Three, two, one. That sounded almost like NASA level cooperation.
Wasn't it?
The first curveball for you is, Catherine, why are there crosses on your wall?
Oh, you know, that's a long story, but I will try to
is
make it.
It.
Not really.
You make it short.
I'll make it short. I was in LA visiting a friend when she was still living there, and we went to the Capistrano Mission, and I bought the original cross, which is in the middle of the wall. It has Milagros all over it.
You bought the original cross.
I bought the original. Yeah, the original. No, not the OG. The original cross on my wall. Not the origin.
The first one.
Of the,
you mean yeah. the first crawl that shows
yeah,
up.
Yeah, the
your
first
wall.
One. It's in the middle, and it's this lovely... I mean, they didn't even want to let me carry it on the plane. They almost confiscated it at LAX.
Why?
Because it had metal on it. I'm like, it's a freaking cross from Capistrano. I had to pull out the receipt. So I brought it home, and I thought it was pretty, and I was just going to hang it up. And so I showed – I wasn't living here, and I showed my dad, and he was like, oh, thanks. I like it. He would claim things like that. And so I left
wow.
it here. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, if you ate food out and then you brought something home – like, you know, from the restaurant to eat it the next day.
Yes, I know. Yes,
yeah,
that's
my dad
where the
would.
Food would come from, yes.
Yeah, my dad would eat it for breakfast.
Wow.
Yeah, and you never got
rude.
Your taco. Yeah, that's another story. Yeah, he did that to my friend Sherry. She was like, we got up, we were like, ooh, we're going to eat our little food. And it smelled like enchiladas. And Sherry's like,
okay,
Jerry.
That's just
okay, anyway.
Unforgivable. If someone did that to me, it would be over.
I know. She's like, Jerry. Well, he's like, oh, those were really good. Thanks for bringing those home for me. It was always for him. My father was hilarious. And he didn't do it maliciously. It was just he really thought that. But
oh,
anyway, he liked
bullshit.
The cross. He liked the cross. So I left it here. And he hung it on the wall. And then they were very involved in their church, the Catholic church they were attending at the time, and they worked in the gift shop. So then he found more crosses, and he started making this plethora of maximalist cross wall. And so it kind of grew like that, and then he arranged it. He had it all set out. He measured all those little holes, like where everything goes.
All right, so is this still important to you, though, to have these crosses on the wall?
No, it isn't, but because there's so many other things that, you know, flare up in this house, that's like kind of on my list of things to address,
to do.
But it's not.
Right.
Yeah. At this point, it's probably way down on the list.
So what was the airline concerned? That you were going to do crucifixions on the plane or something?
You know, you'd have to go back in time and ask the bitch at LAX who was giving me a hard time about it. Really rude. Really. I don't know. Maybe she liked it and just wanted to take it home. It's quite lovely when you see it in person because it's very roughly
okay, the
hewn.
Funniest.
What?
The funniest story, though, about being at the airport and having your stuff confiscated was on a return flight from Iraq,
uh-huh.
A platoon of soldiers, you know, they have special flights, right? This isn't just your regular
uh-huh.
flight, but they charter flights to get the soldiers back home, commercial flights. And so they're going through security. They're literally carrying their rifles with them.
Oh,
they
really?
Don't have any ammunition in them, but they're carrying their rifles with them because they're carrying all their gear. That's what they have, right?
Okay.
The rifle's one of their parts of their gear. The soldier gets up to the X-ray scanner and he puts his stuff through, and the TSA guy says, oh, you can't have toenail clippers. And the soldier's like, what do you mean? Why not? It's like, well, it could be used as a weapon. At which point, the soldier is nearly speechless because he's like pointing at his rifle. He's like,
this is
an actual weapon that I can use as an actual weapon.
You have
but
got
I can
to
get
be
on with that.
Me.
No, that's a real thing that happened.
Oh,
you know,
God.
His sergeant came over and said, just leave the effing toe clippers. Let's get on the damn plane.
Oh, my God.
But that's how dumb TSA is.
Yeah, I've left plenty of things at TSA, water bottles and pepper
so,
spray.
So thank you for your service, but I'm taking your toenail clippers.
Nice. Yeah, that beats my story of the crucifix. But actually, not a crucifix. It's just a cross. But
well,
yeah,
I
that's
will
why.
I always one up you, Catherine.
I know. You always do. You always do.
So,
but that's why I have a wall
me,
of crosses. I have a wall of crosses. That's
and
why.
The other funny thing was this was in the late 90s. So this was pre-9/11. This
right.
would never happen after 9/11.
Right.
But I was going to my sister's wedding, and I, being the handy kind of person I am, and knowing that my sister is the opposite,
uh-huh.
I got a little toolbox and filled it with a bunch of basic tools,
uh-huh.
like a hammer, a screwdriver, a box cutter, other such implements. Okay. So I show up to the airport with this little box, toolbox of stuff, and I go through the security. Again, this is pre-9/11, but even then, they were a little bit hesitant to let someone on the plane with a hammer. And of course, I didn't realize my mistake until I was there. But there's a supervisor and there's a trainee, and the trainee is the one that says, oh, I don't know if we can allow you on the board with this. But the supervisor leans over and says, oh, no, no, no. You see, it's all part of a kit here, so it's fine. So it's like, oh, since I have multiple weapons, it's okay. And it's in a box, so it's okay.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Life, it just throws you lemons and then you make lemonade.
I don't drink lemonade. So the other question I had for you.
Yes, sir.
Should we just podcast every day?
You read my mind.
That was light reading.
I can only skim read. And so, yeah, that's you got it. Things change so fast. I feel like sometimes we should podcast every day. Do you think things are changing rapidly, James?
Well, that was kind of the point.
Yeah, because
it's not like we're that busy anyway.
I mean, if we could do like 20 minutes a day and just do it live and like publish it and bam, slam, thank you, ma'am, I'd be down.
Yeah, that would be great. But we're not smart enough to do that. We need a lot of editing to make ourselves sound smart.
Oh, a lot of editing?
Yeah, kind of a lot.
I would like to hear something I would like to hear like 10 minutes unedited.
I will send you the next one before I edit it. And then you can listen to that. And then out of 40 minutes, I get 28.
Oh, Lord above. Maybe if we just were tighter in our thought process. How do these other people do it? I mean, I watch podcasts all day long.
I don't know. Maybe they're just younger and smarter or not.
No, they're not younger. Smarter. They're our age or, you know, around there. But they just seem to flow.
No, they're not. They're younger. They're all the
some
kids.
Some of the kids. This is some,
freaking 20-year-olds.
Yeah, some of them are like.
I don't want to talk about them.
I know.
Screw
them. But
I'd rather talk about Trump.
Oh, God. Well, see, that's the shit that's like changing so fast.
Yes. Every day he's got a new cover-up to cover up his last cover-up.
Yeah, the last, like, 48 hours have been brutal. Well, the last several days.
So I know you didn't want to talk about this because it's now 2 weeks old, but it keeps happening.
Yeah, no, go
it's
for it.
It's about his pardons.
Yeah.
Pardons. And I just want to point out that when he pardons someone, they're not just getting out of jail. They're also scrubbing their paybacks. And by paybacks, I mean when you go to jail for a financial crime, you're usually also ordered to pay back your victims.
Yes. Yes.
When you get a pardon from Trump, it wipes those away,
see,
too.
See, I did not
and
know
so
that.
So this is 2 weeks old.
I didn't know that.
This is 2 weeks old, but I still think it's worth pointing out. And also, the tally has gone up since then. But as of 2 weeks ago, more than $1.3 billion of paybacks has been washed off the books because of his pardons.
Wow. I did not realize that.
The reason you didn't realize that, Catherine, is because other presidents have not pardoned people who have stolen money from massive amounts of people. This has just not been a thing before.
No. Yeah, it's interesting that Biden didn't use his pardon power to extinguish debt.
No one else has ever done that. No one else has taken million-dollar bribes to give pardons either, but he's doing that too. There will be links in the show notes to the former pardons director from the Department of Justice who's going over this. So it's not like this is just coming out of thin air.
Right.
So it's coming from the horse's mouth.
Right. Yeah, and I had to refresh my mind or my memory, my mind, you know.
Refresh your mind,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, refresh. If I could just hit a button, it'd be great. You know, in terms of why there is presidential pardon, and I didn't remember that it is an Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1 of the U.S. Constitution, providing the president, having the power to grant reprieves, blah, 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 blah. But it doesn't say anything about financial, but I guess it's implied. I mean, I don't know.
Well, that's what a pardon is, though. It's not just, there are different things you can do to get people out of jail or commute their sentences or whatnot, but a full pardon, it's basically wipes the crime away and everything associated with it away, which is kind of madness. But the whole Constitution is set up so that it will block someone like Trump from getting into office.
Mm-hmm.
It failed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Constitution is not structured in a way to deal with someone, a despot, a king like Trump. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's failing so badly right now. And in order to get rid of that power, the pardon power, which is kind of a stupid thing to have in.
I think it is.
You need an amendment to the Constitution, which we haven't done in over 50 years. I think that is a bad sign of governmental rot when you stop doing amendments to your constitution, because it's not like society and technology have stopped. You know, things have keep going. We need more amendments, and we're just not capable of doing them anymore.
I know. They're just undoing the amendments that were done.
They are certainly trying to.
Certainly trying to.
On a whole different note, Catherine, I have another question for you.
Go.
What do you think is the most environmentally friendly power source that we can build today?
I know what I want to say, but I know what it is. It's nuclear, right?
Okay. Well, what do you want to say?
I want to say wind. Mm-hmm. It just feels like it would just be wind, but it's not wind.
You like wind because I'm a blowhard and you think just me talking could probably power the whole valley? My bloviating is that strong?
Yeah, that or the wind cycles.
Thanks. Great. I appreciate that. Vote of confidence.
Vote of confidence. Now, I would like to say wind or thermal or something to do with the planet.
Thermal.
Thermal.
Oh, thermal, because I fart that
yeah,
much
you fart
too?
That
that's great.
Yeah, the
you're,
cows.
You're a real
too.
Supporter here.
Yeah, wind or thermal. Or what's the other one? We have like water power, water generation from the ocean. I would want to go with like Mother
solar?
Nature. Solar. Yeah, solar would be a good one. I'm sorry. I live in Arizona and I fail to remember solar.
And you don't have solar.
I don't God, have solar.
Terrible.
I know. Do I suck?
Oh.
Do
yes.
I suck? I drive an SUV
so
and I don't
know
have
So you know the
solar.
Answer.
Yeah, the answer is nuclear.
You drive a small SUV.
Yeah.
The answer is nuclear. As per the UN report, I mean, I knew this already because I'm so smart.
You are.
But the recent UN report analyzed all the different energy sources mm-hmm. that we could take advantage of today.
Yes.
And I found that by a long stretch, nuclear was the cleanest on every single count.
Wow.
So, for instance, you want solar panel?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Solar power is 4 times more carcinogenic than nuclear, and that's because of the materials you have to use mm-hmm. in building the solar. And you need a lot more solar panels than you need one. So one solar reactor is equal to an infinite number of solar panels.
Oh, one nuclear reactor?
Yeah.
Okay.
That goes a long way.
Uh-huh.
They also lowest greenhouse gases. And again, the manufacture of all the parts of the wind turbines and the offshore stuff mm-hmm. and the solar panels, those all generate a lot more greenhouse gases than building one very big nuclear plant. Or small. You can make them small now.
I know. I wish they were smaller around here.
Well, we have plans for new ones can be much smaller, but there are so many restrictions on building new ones that it makes it very hard to build them. So we just have to change the law so we can build them more easily and they'd be a lot more efficient and a lot safer.
Yes.
Land use also nuclear wins again. Mm-hmm. It uses a lot less land than any of the other options.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's going to blow most people's minds. So nuclear has the fewest deaths associated with it per kilowatt,
uh-huh.
whatever you want
right.
to measure it, than anything else. You know, Chernobyl didn't kill that many people. Yeah, maybe a few thousand after you account for the cancers. Fukushima killed no one. No fatalities from Fukushima. And yet coal regularly on an annual basis kills at least dozens of people. And then the associated problems with gas or oil, you know, that's hundreds of thousands a year.
Right.
Yeah. It's against everyone's intuition because the anti-nuclear crowd have been so successful at painting the whole point of this is just to educate us as a community mm-hmm. again, that nuclear, it really is the best. And that's what we need to be focusing on.
If they could build them safer, I'm not opposed to nuclear, but I, you know, as I was watching, I watched the TikTok that you sent and, you know, read a little bit about it. And in the back of my mind, I couldn't help but wonder about all the nuclear waste and the amount of co-committing cancers that did affect people when, Fukushima, I can never pronounce it.
Fukushima. Fukushima had zero deaths and zero cancer-causing agents.
Really?
Released,
even when the cadmium was washing up against the shores and they were like talking years ago about don't drink the milk from Oregon because like there's cadmium in the water. Remember
okay,
all that?
Here's the thing. The cadmium, that wasn't the problem. They were talking about irradiated water that they used to cool the plant that was released back into the ocean.
Yes, yes.
The water that they used to cool the plant after the meltdown had less radiation in it than the water in the ocean. Because you know what has radiation in it, Catherine?
Everything. Right.
There are no deaths caused by Fukushima. Zero deaths. Cancers, zero deaths. It was completely, anything else, anything you hear to the contrary is fake news.
Okay. The other thing that I thought about, and I don't know if this is, I don't think it's fake, in terms of the aging infrastructure, you kind of alluded to that, in terms of building newer, smaller, perhaps safer structures to house this. I know our plant here, I think, isn't it past its prime
in
terms of the infrastructure? You know, and what does that mean?
Yeah. All of our nuclear plants in the U.S. are well past their use-by dates. And that's because building new ones is almost impossible because of the regulations and the anti-nuclear sentiment. And we have technologies for nuclear reactors that cannot melt down.
That was so nice because, you know.
Yeah, so let's build some new ones.
Yeah, build some new ones. Because I can't help but think, it's like, what does this mean in terms of safety for, you know, spewing of nuclear toxins into the environment if there is a meltdown? I mean, Three Mile Island was pretty devastating. Chernobyl was devastating.
But Three Mile Island was a nothing. Absolutely nothing happened there.
There weren't clusters of cancer?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Anyway.
I'd have to do more research on that.
Let's move on from that. Okay, fine.
But interesting, and I wish they would do something. I worry about our power plant periodically. It's just something I try not to think about.
I appreciate that we have it because, like I said, it's the only clean energy it's the cleanest energy we have. So I appreciate the fact that what's not coming off of my roof, because I have solar on my roof, is coming from a nuclear reactor. So now that I have an EV car, I drive, you know, with a lot less weight on my mind.
You do have an EV? You bought one?
Yeah, I bought a Bolt.
Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah, the
one.
Bolt.
Yeah, because it was dirt cheap. Because I'm cheap.
I should get a Bolt.
Don't jump on the bandwagon. You already have a car. Why would you replace the car you have?
You know, the only reason I would, I can't afford to replace the car I have right now. But B, just the minimum driving I do, the minimum, and it's minimum at best, still sucks so much gas. And I'm always astonished, even when I'm loading up at Costco gas station, almost a gas plant. What I'm saying, but like at the gas station, it's a drain. You know, there's a lot of gas that goes into that vehicle.
Come on, you're not driving that much. Come on, relax.
I know, but it seems to suck it down. It just seems to suck it down like a Slurpee. It's always hungry.
Okay.
My little baby out there is always hungry.
Just relax.
So anyway, I'm trying. How can you relax?
That's one of the things you don't need to concern yourself with.
I am concerned. I'm concerned about so much, James.
Well, buying in Bolt is not going to help you. Just relax.
No, buying a
Bolt. Stop looking at the news.
Yeah, talk me off that ledge, please.
Watching the news?
The news ledge, yeah.
Okay, again, I'll repeat this. Don't read the articles. Don't watch the videos. Just look at the headlines so you know what's happening, but don't look at the details. You don't need to know what's happening because it hasn't blown up completely yet. And until it blows up completely, and until you need to go on the streets with your guns and start shooting ICE agents, you know, it's just, we don't need to do anything about it. There's nothing you can do about it. If you want to go to a protest, go to a protest. If you want to help the Democrats get their message out and, you know, gather votes, do that. But if you're out at dinner at a Chinese restaurant, for instance, don't open your goddamn phone. New thing. Let's just take a 90-degree turn. Stupid article over at Axios trying to explain AI again. And AI leaves web in the lurch is what it says. And I think the real beauty of the quote from this article was, quote, Google shaped a search-based web on which independent publishers and individual contributors could survive, if not always thrive, end quote.
Yeah.
I thought that was the funniest thing I'd ever read because whoever wrote that has no idea what the web was like before Google, because before Google, we all thrived with our own content. I used to have a blog that people read, literally.
Oh, really?
Like people would come to I'm a nobody, but people would read it. I had one post. It's the stupidest post I probably ever wrote. It was comparing the Nikon D40 versus the Nikon D60, which were basically interchangeable cameras. But I went deep dive into which one was better, and I had 40 comments on that post.
Oh, my gosh.
And I made almost $500 from Amazon links from that post to buying those cameras on Amazon.
Oh, really?
Yes. The web was a glorious place before Google, and then Google decimated it. Google was terrible for the web. Google has done nothing but try to steal your content and republish it for its own uses, and has been devastating to publishers. absolutely devastating. So to think that Google has somehow helped publishers is complete and utter bullshit. The only thing that they ever did to help publishers was stuff that they were forced to by the courts.
I see.
That's just complete and utter nonsense. And you know, they're saying this because, well, Google might have been bad, but it's not as bad as AI. It's like, you know what? AI is doing to Google what Google did to the web.
Yes.
So I don't cry for Google at all. And the web is long dead. The beauty, the glory that was the web is gone forever. Well, maybe not forever, but it has taken a serious nap for the past 20 years.
Do you think that AI is just going to replace human interface?
It certainly will in some ways. That's one of the more interesting aspects of it is Johnny Ive, the former head of design at Apple, and the guy from AI, Sam Altman.
Right.
They're getting together. They're trying to build a whole new device, which is AI first. And if you can just talk to your technology, that's going to change things. I don't know how much. I don't know if that means we don't have our phones anymore, if we just talk to them, or if we just interact with them differently. But it certainly has the opportunity to, you can create programs with AI. Mm-hmm. You can create all this stuff. It's like, I don't know why anybody would bother learning Photoshop anymore, because if you want to edit a photo, you can just spit it into AI and just tell it what you want. And within 30 seconds, it'll do what you wanted it to do.
Right. And, you know, and that's what I was thinking about when I was reading this. It's like, as AI, quote unquote, takes over more and more. Like, we've talked about this before on the podcast, that it was like a tool for creativity. Do you see it now becoming something other than a tool?
It's still a tool. It's just like it's a slightly different tool than we've had before, because the other tools, like the computer, is a tool. But the computer is like a better tool than the tools we've had in the past. Like, let's take CAD, computer-aided design, which is really just a fancy way of saying a mechanical drawing. Like, if you want to make something like a teapot, you have to draw a very detailed drawing of it with dimensions and whatnot and multiple views, so that when you go to manufacture it, you know what you're making.
Right.
Right. So that's CAD. So in the old days, you had to draw that by hand, and you had to have sheets upon sheets upon sheets for any given product. And it was a pain in the ass. Or building. Same thing with buildings. With the computer, it makes it so much easier, because you can focus on one part. You can recreate the whole thing without having... If you had to change in the old days of having everything on paper, you had to redo like a dozen drawings. And that would take like just a full day just to redo the drawings. Now you can change one little part and the whole thing updates by itself. So it takes like 5 minutes rather than a whole day. That was the improvement that computers brought to tools. AI, though, takes away the need to make the drawing in the first place. You can just tell the computer to do it. So it's generative. That's kind of a game changer. The computers are doing things for us now. It's not making it easier for us to do the things that we used to do. It's now doing those things for us.
Yes.
It's a very different type of place that we're at now.
Interesting. Yeah, I thought this was really interesting. And it's like, it's kind of has taken the tool perspective and just taken it a step further in some ways.
Right. But in a step that we've never had before in human history.
Have you noticed a growing number of AI explanations when doing searches?
What's that?
Like, you know, when you do a search now on the internet, and, you know, it'll bring up like a synopsis, like an AI-generated explanation. It clearly identifies it, that it's a, you know, an explanation compiled from multiple sources. When I was doing my notes, I wrote in my notes, now that I'm looking at it, even as I type this, the typing is filling in words for me, and I didn't ask it to do it. You know, I mean, it seems to infuse itself into so many aspects, you know.
So that's a good example, though. As you're writing, it's trying to complete your sentence for you.
Yes.
It didn't used to do that for you.
Right.
What it used to do is you would type, and then it would show you where your mistakes were.
Exactly.
Where your misspellings were. Or, well, maybe not you, because you're perfect. But for me, every sentence was littered with misspellings and bad grammar. Now it's trying to anticipate and write the stuff before you even get to it. So that's a good example of how the tool is changing.
Yes. But that anticipatory prompting is disturbing to my train of thought. Like, I'd rather...
Okay, well then turn it off.
I'd rather, and I type fast and I type inaccurately many times, depending on how fast the brain is going. And as it's prompting me, when my brain is trying to process, it's like, it's almost like two machines competing for the same place on the page.
Well, then you need to turn that off.
Oh, you can?
You can use tools that don't have that.
Okay.
Or you can turn it off. I'm sure there are ways to turn it off. Or you can just go back to using a typewriter.
Which I have two typewriters.
I was afraid to ask how many typewriters you had, Catherine.
I have dose. I have two.
Why do you even have one?
Well, I used to do a lot of, not thrifting. Well, was it thrifting? I was helping.
Yeah,
a friend.
I think so.
Yeah. So I did a lot of thrifting. Okay.
You're a thrifter.
You know, regardless of, I'm a thrifter and a drifter. Yeah. Regardless of why.
You're coming out on the show as a thrifter.
Yeah. So I was hanging out with this guy in my yoga teacher training, and he used to love to go to these, you know, do the estate sales. And so we got
sales.
On several. Yeah. We got on several estate sale lists. And so they prompt you, you know, it's like we weren't like the A number one people to go, like the thrift stores get like, you know, the first dibs, but we were definitely the next of the first in line. And we go, and I found this Hermes typewriter. I just liked the design of it. And it's just really cool. I'll send you a picture.
Yeah, you just love stuff, don't you? That's the problem.
I love
Kathy.
Stuff. And
love stuff too much.
I know. I took it over to Mesa Typewriter, who I hope he's still in business. It's a darling little typewriter shop. It's just adorable. And I love it's downtown Mesa. He fixed the typewriter and he said it was a very good little typewriter. And so then when I thrifted more, I found another typewriter. And they're both like what they consider writer's typewriters. That's what the guy at Mesa Typewriter told me. And they have green keys. Like my Hermes has mint green keys. It's a mint green casing. And it's just lovely with very nice mid-century design. I should take it out and just display it, but it's in the shed. And I just, I really like my typewriters, although I don't use them. And they have been in the shed in the back for quite some time. And it gets hot back there, so they may need a little bit of...
You know, that doesn't surprise me, though, that you I don't know how what it is about you, but you do seem to be able to find the good stuff in a pile of junk.
Yes.
And it's not just the typewriters, right? I mean, you found that, what was it? You found some silver jewelry.
Oh, yeah, that silver belt.
A great artist.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know how you do this, but you are like Michael Caine in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Like he wanted to be a great artist, right? But he tried all these different things. He was never any good at any of them. What he realized at the end, though, was that he had good taste. So he uses good taste to maybe do nefarious things to people. But, you know, how else are you going to capitalize on good taste?
Oh, no, I'm not nefarious. I'm just a collector. You know, that belt that still amazes me. I remember walking into that thrift store that's no longer there. And I saw that belt from the door.
That's crazy.
I was outside. And I'm like, that is friggin' 925 silver. And I beelined right to the, I mean, I could see it from the outside as my friend was opening the door to the shop. And I'm like, I'm going in. There was a belt rack right there. And it was like about 15 belts back. They just had them all piled up. You know?
Yeah. We don't have to go in the story again.
No, and I just friggin' love
it.
I still
have
it. I'm very special. But I've not had that much luck thrifting anymore. I think there's so many thrifting blogs and people are out there finding all this quote unquote amazing stuff. I think some of it's just planted because there's no way in hell they're finding that great of stuff every freaking day when they go thrifting.
Well, if you're telling like everything that happened the day and that day, though, that's what social media is, right? Social media just highlights the one thing, the one in a million thing.
Yeah, but, you know, these people have these blogs or whatever, their little YouTube channels, and they seem to find, like, the greatest goods every time. And I don't really buy it. I don't because it's a diamond in the rough. I mean, you really have to look, and you've got to spend time. I guess maybe they do spend time, and that's their life, but I don't have that kind of – well, I guess I do have that kind of time. I choose to not use it like that. Can I just tell you a quick story?
If it's quick, but you don't do quick stories.
My new favorite place to thrift is Stardust, where they do the building stuff. Have you been there?
I have not.
I freaking love that place. And it's so gross, but it's so amazing. I went down to Tucson, you know, a couple weeks ago, and we always shop on 4th. It was a 4th Avenue, and there's this adorable little store that has all recycled stuff in it. And I just fell in love with some of the articles. And it always gives me motivation. So I went to Stardust and bought some supplies. And it just motivated me to be creative. So I'm going to make a little coat holder, a little key holder out of a recycled door that I found at Stardust with some doorknobs.
Is Stardust in Tucson?
No, Stardust. There's one on 51st Avenue and... Northern
Glendale.
Oh, 51st.
Well, it might as well be in Tucson. 51st.
No,
Avenue.
And then and then there's no there.
And it's like California.
But there's stuff like on your. I mean, there's a Stardust everywhere.
I don't know what a Stardust is. I've never heard of this. What are you talking about?
Oh, it's a building. Like if you tear down your house or you take out your cabinets and you don't want to fill up the landfill, you take it to Stardust.
Then you call Habitat for Humanity because you're a human, you're a humane person.
It's a Habitat for Humanity under a different name. Like I went there and, you know, that Morazzo tile that I'm putting throughout the whole house, I have a good eye for this stuff. And this Morazzo tile, there was a big box of a different color. I had a vision in my head of tiling something else in the house, not the floor. And I thought it'd be pretty to do it two different colors. And that was actually the color. It's like this very misty gray. And they had the same damn tile that I spent like an arm and a leg. And they had it there. And I'm like, damn, I'm just going to get it because I'll keep thinking about it. I may not use it now, but I will use it.
This is so exciting. Please continue talking about your tile.
but that's what I'm saying. It's good for shit like that.
Oh, yeah, I get that. It's not good for a podcast, though.
Should we wrap this?
Didn't you want to talk about Taylor Swift?
I did want to talk about. Yeah, I was happy. You know, because I've been kind of doing this thing about reclaiming my creativity. I'm really trying to be creative. I'm really trying to use that as an outlet for my angst. Not that it's working, but it's kind of working. So I came across this Rolling Stone article about Taylor Swift and about her re-recording project and what a massive success that was in terms of her Taylor's version. And it was kind of in light of the fact that she just bought back her life's work, as I look at it, you know, from Scooter Braun, the CEO of Hybe US, who previously bought rights to her first six albums. And the fact that she re-recorded it really is a flex. It's a big F you to the powers that be. I thought it was impressive that she reclaimed her life's work back. And it just kind of fit into my little mantra of like kind of trying to reclaim my creativity amongst the detritus of what my life has become.
Well, how are you doing that now?
I'm trying to funnel it into some writing. Ah. I'm trying to funnel it into people I've connected with, like this gal Jackie, who does Doodles and Drinks, I think is what it's called.
Are you publishing your writings?
I'm not. I've not published anything yet.
Why do you hold back on that?
I always worry about, not competition, but I worry about criticism.
And then
Okay, Catherine, I have a perfect solution for you. What?
Create a blog. No one will read it because no one reads blogs anymore, but you still have published it.
Should I do that on Substack?
And
I have a Substack.
You can create a blog that doesn't take comments.
What? Substack has comments?
I know. I'm saying you can create a blog that doesn't have comments.
Oh, that'd be good.
It's up to you. It's up to you whether you turn the comments on or off.
Okay.
Now, in the blog I used to have took comments.
I will try that.
But my new blog, or you know, the blogs I've had since then, I don't have comments on. Well, no one comments anyway, but and I'm actually, my secret project that I've been working on is taking all my blog posts from over the decades of blog. Yes, it's now decades of blogging. Taking all that content, which is currently on WordPress, and making it static HTML, and I'm going to repost it on my own website, on my own domain, and it's all going to be static, and it's like the web as it was in 1996.
Nice.
We'll see.
Will any of us be able to access it?
Oh, yeah, no, it'll be totally accessible. It'll be the easiest blog you've ever read because there's nothing running in the background. So it's just like the smallest text files you can download and look at. It'll be really easy to see and read because there's no bullshit trying to, there's no ads, there's no tracking bullshit, nothing. It's just text, a couple embedded videos, and it's probably the only place where anything's going to be tracking you. It's not my tracking you, it's YouTube.
Right.
And just a couple of small images and text.
Okay.
It's taking me forever because I'm trying to track down the original links that I was linking to, and most of them are gone, so I'm trying to find replacement links for these articles and whatnot.
Wow.
I've gotten back to 2011. I'm currently working on 2011.
Oh, I'm so excited. I didn't know this was the big project for you.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the dumb projects. It's one of the dumb things I do. You know, when
it's
you don't have a lot going on in your life, I find dumb things to do, and this is a dumb thing I'm doing.
Oh, I know. And the dumb thing I need to do is like get through all this paperwork on this table.
Oh,
and that
yeah.
like impedes my creativity. But see, I didn't do stuff online. I was a writer, like the physically wrote or typed. It was a physical exercise. And I was compiling them in another physical book.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like I probably should get back to that too.
You should. And there's no reason why you can't publish that. And there's no reason why you can't publish on the web as well if you want to.
That's a good point.
I mean, I've listened to some podcasts lately where they get some really nerdy publisher guys. And it's one guy publishes, self-published a book about the history of fonts.
Oh, God, I'm asleep already.
Well, you think you would be, but it's actually kind of interesting. I mean,
was it?
It's little. Well, I didn't read the book, obviously, because I don't read books. But if okay. I were to read books, well, he totally self-published it, and he's got like there were like 100 copies of it, and then he republished uh-huh. it because people wanted them. But you know, they had it physically printed on a printing press with a very uh-huh. specific typeface and all these different things, and then he talked to another guy who basically did the same thing. It was just this whole thing, like. It's kind of a love letter to how we used to make things with written words in them.
I love that.
I think you would. I mean, boy, it went down a rabbit hole.
Many rabbit holes.
So here's the thing. There's just one little nugget. Like, do you know why we call bigger letters uppercase versus lowercase?
No, I do not.
Well, when the Americans were moving out west, mm-hmm. they were publishing stuff, and they would keep the big letters in an uppercase above the printing press and the lowercase in a lowercase below the printing press. So it's literally, hey, could you grab the uppercase of letters?
Oh, uppercase. Oh, no.
So that's where uppercase, because this
is such a mundane explanation.
It's not. Is that mundane? I thought that was like, what?
No, I mean, but I.
It's literally the case that's above you versus the case that's below you.
It's not mundane, but it's so simple.
I don't know. I think it was kind of. Beautiful.
I think it's kind of, it is beautiful. Okay, I recant my statement.
So everything is like that, though. Etymology or I don't know, whatever. The history of words is just uh-huh. nutballs.
It is nutballs. Well, link that. I would like to read that book. I do read books.
Oh, shit. I have to look it up now.
Yeah, link that in the show notes.
I think it was on Daring Fireball, the talk show, but I'll have to double check.
Okay.
Yeah, that must have been where I heard it.
Yeah, okay. And I'm so glad to like not talk politics right now. It feels
we
very
did talk
good.
Politics.
Thank you. A little bit, but not like we could have.
Oh, and Taylor Swift. Yeah, I think I only like one of her albums. That was 1980. I was going to say 1984. Yeah, 1984 by Taylor Swift. Ooh, we should do that. That would be an interesting collaboration.
1984 by
artistic,
Taylor Swift.
Creation.
Taylor's version.
1984 by Taylor Swift. So anyway, 1989 was the one I'm trying to say. I like that album. I have to admit, I kind of like that album. I don't really like her other albums, but I like that one.
Yeah, I can't say that I was a Swiftie, but I do appreciate her creative nature. I do appreciate that she went up against the machine and
dominated.
She's
kind of the machine, though.
She is the machine, too, but good for her.
Yeah, Catherine, there's always some tell that we're at the end of the episode, and sometimes it's when you go on about your tiles, and sometimes it's about when we start talking about our musical tastes, and I think that's a pretty good clue.
I think that's a pretty good clue. Let's wrap it. And then next time, let's talk about some of the things going on in the art world here in Phoenix. There's some big changes coming to some of the galleries downtown, and I'd like to talk about that. Okay?
All right.
All righty. Okay.
Bye.
Okay, bye.